Do you lie awake at night wishing for something better? When you look at your future a year from now, is there a light at the end of that tunnel? Do you feel like you were meant for something more? Opportunity will not come knocking on your door unless you're out there looking for it. How do you do it? Our guests on the Empower Radio Show will be sharing their secret to success. We'll be bringing you authors, speakers, entrepreneurs from many different fields who come from various backgrounds. They will be sharing their stories of success and of early failures. You'll hear about the challenges they faced when they launched their ideas and the creative ways that they overcame obstacles. Our guests will inspire you to find your way down the path to success in this ever-changing world. Jump on board and become empowered.
Hey folks, welcome to Empower Radio Show. This is Linda Ballesteros. I am your host today, and I appreciate you stopping by and giving us a little bit of your time. As I always say, time is that one commodity that you can't get back. So when someone sits down, even if it's just sharing a cup of coffee together, be sure to be grateful that they spent that time with you, because they'll never get that hour back. Today, we're going to be talking about something that very few people think about. So why would I bring this topic to the show? Well, folks, it's about wills. Did you know that 63% of Americans do not have a will? And 9% of those that do have a will, it's outdated. So do we really need a will? Is it really that important? Well, my guest today is Bebe Hollis, and she is the senior counsel for and the founder of HBH Law Offices in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. She's been a practicing attorney since 1999, and she was a litigation attorney for the New York City Police Department. Today, she helps businesses and individuals in the Dallas-Fort Worth area with any of their legal issues and questions. So I'd like for you to help me to welcome Bebe Hollis. Bebe, thanks for being on the show today.
Good morning, Linda. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Bebe, today my goal is to completely disprove some of those images that many of the people have out there about attorneys, because you were one of the nicest people that I know, but I also know that you fight for your clients too. So I'm going to dispel all of those cartoons that you see on attorneys. So help me do that, Bebe.
Thank you, Linda. I appreciate that.
Well, tell me something, Bebe. Did you always want to be an attorney since you were a kid and, you know, in elementary school? What do you want to be? And you go, oh, I want to be an attorney. Have you always wanted to do that?
You know, ever since I can remember, that's what I wanted to do. I'm not really sure why, but it was just something that was always there.
So what was the first step? How did you actually into law school? I mean, did you go straight out of school into law school? How did all that play out for you?
Well, I went to undergrad at Texas Tech, and I did a triple major for some odd reason. I majored in English, Latin, and political science.
And, you're such an overachiever.
It was just the Latin part was a bit of an accident. It was a bit of a fluke when my classics professor told me, "Bebe, you do three more classes, you'll have a Latin major, and that's going to be so useful." So, I think it was. Well, it's useful in as much as it helps me at trivia games, and I can generally figure out word meanings before other people can. But that's pretty much it.
Well, as long as you can use it at some point, I guess it was worth it, right?
Exactly. But I did, I went to undergrad at Texas Tech, and then I actually did work for a D.C. law firm in Washington, D.C. for a couple of months between college and law school. And I determined at that point that the big boutique law firm lifestyle was actually not for me. I did want to pursue being a lawyer, but that whole, like, it was just at that point, it was this mega corporation. I believe the law firm that I worked for, I think, had about 100 offices all over the world. And
oh,
it
wow.
was just, I just never saw the same person twice. And the lady that was my supervisor, she was probably in her mid to late 30s at that time. And the only thing that was in her drawers, Linda, were uncashed checks for months and months and months and bottles of Dexatrim. And she had no time to eat, and she didn't even have time to cash her checks. At that time, we didn't have direct deposit, so she just had stacks of checks sitting in her drawers.
Clearly not the lifestyle you had thought you would be living as an attorney, right?
Correct. And so at that time, I thought, no, this is not. I'm gonna do something being a lawyer, but this isn't going to be it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, how did you start working for the New York City Police Department?
Going to Rutgers in Camden, New Jersey, which was basically across the river from Philadelphia. And my fiance at the time was, he was a cop for the NYPD. And he had mentioned to me, well, you know, NYPD has a legal bureau. Why don't you, you know, try to apply for an internship, which is what I did. And I was an intern there for the entire time I was in law school. And I actually didn't go from law school straight to the police department, though I worked for the New York City Department of Homeless Services for about a year, where I was basically an administrative law judge, my first job out of law school. And I basically determined whether or not people were legally homeless or not.
Well,
and whether they would be eligible for homeless shelters all throughout New York City.
Well, it's clear that you have a passion for helping people, you know, because for you, for those type of openings to present themselves to you, I always feel that it's certainly something that gravitates to you. So at what point did you, what were you doing? Let me ask this. What were you doing when you were actually working for the police department?
I actually started off doing freedom of information law. It's litigation, basically working for the police department where people would ask for various forms of records, which are presumption in state, right, all the states and in federal law that any kind of public record is available to the public upon request, unless they fit within several exemptions. So people would request hundreds and thousands of documents from the police department, and generally we would basically be sorting through to determine whether or not they would have access to it, members of the public. But that wasn't my job. That was actually a unit. It was when it got to the point where we denied information to people that they would file a lawsuit against the police department and the city of New York. So that's where I came in, and basically would litigate. And it was people like, you know, that were generally incarcerated or different types of people that were trying to get various forms of public records from the police department. Like a lot of times they would be, you know, mobsters who would just send a letter to the police department and say, well, I just want my witness names. I just want it for my files. And meanwhile, they're like, they're in prison for setting a building or two on fire or whatever. We would have exemptions for that. So then they would be denied, and then it would come back through court. And so that was where I basically cut my teeth and, you know, like a very green litigation attorney. And then I was working on appeals. One of our biggest cases, one of the biggest cases that I worked on actually was like a 9/11 deal where the New York Times requested all the 9/11 tapes that police department had in their possession.
Oh, wow.
And during 9/11. And it was just a battle over 2 or 3 years. And ultimately, you know, we won. And, you know, because it was basically it fit under an exemption of, you know, a public safety issue, privacy. It was literally the last few seconds where people were, they were actually calling from the towers and asking for help. And
wow.
So the police department's whole theory and their perspective was that we're not releasing these records because they're highly sensitive. They're literally seconds before right. people were dying.
Right.
And so
right.
ultimately, you know, the city of New York and the New York Times came to a bit of a settlement and they did have all the records and they did release them. But it was that was one of it went from small mobsters making requests to the police
yeah.
department all the way to, you know, the New York Times making requests
wow.
for records from
wow.
the police department.
Wow. Well, you've certainly seen a variety in, especially working in New York. Now that you're mm-hmm. in the Dallas-Fort Worth area working with small business owners, I would hope that you don't see that many mobsters anymore. But working with individuals and small business owners, I am sure that you see that sometimes we get ourselves in a jam. And some of it is because we don't see the importance, just like a will. As I mentioned at the top of the show, that 63% of Americans don't have a will. Bibi, why is that?
I think about this all the time. It surprises me that people who walk into my office will tell me that they have, you know, between $5 and $15 million of assets, and in their 50s, they're thinking about having an estate plan for the first time in
wow.
their lives. But I
wow.
think what it is that honestly, after doing it for this long, I believe that people just don't want to think about their own mortality. It's unpleasant. They know in the back of their mind that they have to get it done at some point, but they just don't want to deal with it today. And so generally what I have coming into my office are people who've had some sort of an experience where someone close to them has passed away or a friend who passed away without a will, and then they see the agonizing headache of dying without a will and the ramifications on the family members. And that's why a lot of times, I mean, it's sad, but I would say probably about 75% of the people who come into the office for a consultation, it's because of that sort of a situation. So
they have to be faced with either maybe a health challenge of their own
right.
or seeing
mm-hmm.
a friend or someone they know faced with not having a will and how difficult it was for family members. So in that, how difficult is it, Bibi, is it that big a deal? If I have an estate, okay, let's say it's not a $5 million or $15 million, but let's just say it's a million, a half a million, a million. What are some of the things that your family will be faced with if you don't have a will?
If you have real property, there's always an issue with if you have real property, you're on the deed, you're on the title, and nothing can be done with that property unless it's either in a trust or it basically has to be passed on, but the deed has to be in the person's name. The title has to be in the person's name that wants to do something with it. So a lot of times things are titled in the deceased person's name and it literally just sits there until it goes through probate because no one can do anything most of the time with that asset. And so that's one of the biggest headaches I see people facing is that they were not aware that only, say, one spouse, you would think it would be uncommon between spouses, but a lot of times just the one spouse, and it's the one who has passed away, that's who has the title. And so the surviving spouse can't do anything with that until they actually become the executor of the estate or someone does. And even if it is between, you know, the husband and the husband and the wife are both on the title, it just kind of depends on what the deed is as to whether the husband has a surviving share, or it really just kind of falls into, you actually have to look at the deed and the titles to see who has what. To surviving spouse, that's not necessarily automatically, it doesn't automatically go to the surviving spouse. So that's another issue I see that comes up a lot with the real property.
But so, if they have a will, that just kind of takes a lot of those wrinkles out. If the will specifically states that the property goes to the surviving spouse.
It does, and another thing that a will do is that it can spell out who they want to be as an executor. So that's not something that the court has to decide. Right now I have a case where a lady passed away, and she had been married to her husband for about 15 years, and she passed away without a will, and the title is kind of unusual, and so there now both the surviving son, and so it's a stepson of the husband who is the surviving spouse. I actually have a hearing this week where basically it's going to come down to both of them have applied to become executor of her estate, and the judge is going to decide who is going to be the executor of the estate.
Oh my goodness, that can. Now, Bibi, can't that tear families apart?
Oh, gosh, yes. I see a lot of alienation, a lot of hurt feelings. On top of the logistics of going through the probate process, it's the grief as well. So it's really like twofold that the person is having to deal, like in this case, the surviving husband is my client, and he's just having to deal with his wife suddenly passed away overseas, and now he's having to, the stepson and her son, he wants the house sold so that he can get his share from his mother's estate. Meanwhile, here's this gentleman who's actually living in the house. And so it does, it just becomes really, it becomes sad for all the parties concerned if someone doesn't do planning, unfortunately. And I think that in this day and age, people are always thinking that they can do it themselves. And we call it homemade wills. And sometimes people come into my office and bring me a homemade will, 5 or 6 pages long, and they'll tell me, well, it's better than nothing. Well, I've had situations, Linda, where I've been in probate over homemade wills for over, at this point, let's see, it's 2009. I have one case that has been in the probate court since 2009. So the mother passed away in 2009, and it's just been going back and forth because she had a homemade will that was very, very and I guess it was poorly drafted because it was just pulled off the internet. And so it opened up the heir, where it talks about who are the surviving heirs is very particularly badly drafted. And so it opened the door to litigation. So in this case, if the mother had passed away without a will and it had gone to her two children, her heirs, it would have actually been, it would have been better as opposed to a poorly drafted will that had just been pulled off of whatever, internet website that the person had found. And this lady was actually particularly sophisticated. She had like a $1 million company, a construction company. And so for her to pull off a will off of the internet and just, decide to use that has been extremely problematic for her children. So it's sad
to
see.
Brings up another question, Bibi. What happens? I mean, we're talking about houses and cars, but now what about when someone has a business? What happens to the business when they're the sole owner?
And that too, that's another issue that pops up, and not as frequently, but it is, it is enough to be a concern. Yeah. If someone has a business, basically, if it really kind of struggle because it's usually in Texas, they're usually LLCs, just because LLCs, limited liability companies, are basically the more, they're easily manageable by smaller companies. And so it really kind of depends on how the LLC is set up as to how a person might, like a surviving spouse, might have to come in and wrangle with all sorts of paperwork with the state in order to administer the business after the spouse has passed away. So that does become a bit of a problem.
I can see where it could almost cause the business to fold.
Oh, sure. Certainly.
Wow.
It opens up a huge, a Pandora's box on someone. And I didn't really believe how many things can happen when someone dies dies intestate, we call it. Every time I think I've seen it all, something else pops up that makes me think, wow, that's a new one. It's interesting. I really do. In this area of the law, you learn something new all the time. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, are the laws around wills and probate and estates, does that vary from state to state?
Yes, it does. They're similar, but the way that they are enforced and how the law falls when someone dies without a will is very different from state to state. Mm-hmm. So while there is like a structure that all the states follow, there are lots of particularities that are different as they go from state to state. And a lot of people do come to me and say, well, I had an estate plan drawn up in Oklahoma or wherever. Can you take a look at it? And a lot of times we'll do that, is we'll provide a consultation for a client and look over the entire document to make sure that it would be valid and appropriate in the state of Texas.
Mm-hmm. How often should you have a will updated, BB? Because, you can't put one in place when you're 25 years old and expect it to be effective when you pass away at 85.
Right. Although some people do. My general rule of thumb is to always have, review your estate plan with your estate planner, with your attorney, at least every 5 years. And generally, I recommend when there's any sort of a life change, the birth of a child, the death of someone, any kind of major life event, it only takes a quick phone call to talk to your estate planner and say, what do I need to do anything with this? Even I get a lot of phone calls right now as far as like the tax reform and, do I need to do anything? And, that's why I promote always having a good relationship with your estate planner, whomever it is, just because you want to always be in touch with that person or that firm. I've found a lot of times, I'm always talking about revocable trusts and wills. With the revocable trust, I've seen I've seen at least 20 or 25 this year in the past 12 months that have been created but have not been funded. So while they were created by an estate planner, the estate planner didn't tell the individuals how to actually fund the revocable trust. And so basically they have an estate plan which is completely ineffective because they haven't done what they were supposed to do or what their estate planner should have told them to do, which is, you need to put your house into the trust. You need to put you need to put your business into the trust. You need to put whatever into the trust. And then, I've had situations where I've actually had to go to probate completely nullifies the reason for having a revocable trust just because it was completely unfunded. So that's always it's always very appalling to me just because the person actually went to the effort
to do the revocable trust and a pour over will, and basically it was completely ineffective because they weren't instructed properly on how to use it, basically.
It's that final step that makes it legitimate.
Correct.
Wow, how interesting. Baby, we need to take a real quick commercial break. And when we come back, maybe you can share with us some other stories, because you know, you've really been able to share some great stories, but maybe you can share some other stories where someone actually was able to prevent some of this from happening, you know,
sure.
Was able to take care of their family by setting some things up. So we're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back with more from Bebe Hollis.
Tune in every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. to Tough Talk Christian Radio with Tony Gambone. Tough Talk Christian Radio is for those who want to share and receive expressions of faith that will help you take the next step in your relationship with Christ. Listen in to hear from others about their experiences of faith and the love of Christ. Call in to share your experiences at 347-989-1363. Learn more by going to toughtalkchristianradio.com.
So you think you're tough enough for Tough Talk with Tony Gambone? Tony knows how to dish it out. Can you take it? Tony Gambone is a communicator, mentor, and entrepreneur whose tough style and generous spirit quickly garnered recognition in many a competitive arena. Now he's bringing his intelligence and knowledge to you as a hard-hitting radio talk show host and thought leader. Tune in and see for yourself. Tough Talk with Tony Gambone. It's a sure thing. To find out more, go to Tough Talk with Tony Gambone.
Did you know that an estimated 52 million Americans listened to internet radio in the last month, or that weekly internet radio audience has increased 60% over the last year, and that more than 8 in 10 people are online from any location? Tough Talk Radio Network is a company dedicated to providing a platform that allows opportunities for guests, hosts, and sponsors to market themselves through the internet radio medium, where they can be heard by millions. To find out how Tough Talk Radio Network can help you, go to toughtalkradionetwork.com.
Hey folks, welcome back to Empower Radio Show. This is Linda Ballesteros. My guest today is Bebe Hollis, and she's talking about wills. Now, Bebe, before we go any further, if someone is listening and they want to know more about you, if they want to know if there's any way that you can help them, how would they get in touch with you?
They can go to our website, which is www.hbhattorneys.com. So it's www.hbhattorneys.com, and they can actually, through a portal, send an email to us, or they can call me at or call us at 972-346-8076, or shoot me an email at bibi@hbhattorneys.com.
Wonderful. So before we left for commercial, we broke away for commercial, you were telling us of some situations that you had seen where they weren't handled very well. So what I'd like to do is maybe you can highlight some of your clients that you've worked with that maybe has done it right, and they did make all the preparations. So maybe you can describe what that would look like.
Yeah, I've actually had, like you had mentioned before, I had a younger man, I would guess he was like 32 or 33 at the time, who had been diagnosed with a terminal cancer, and he had come into my office and wanted to take everything, take care of everything for his wife and his two babies. At that time, I think his children were 1 and 3, and his wife was maybe 29 or 30. And the wife was somewhat in denial. So he had come in on his own, and he basically Been in estate plan he did a revocable trust with a will, and basically everything was in her name. And the revocable trust. So it was a revocable trust for the benefit of both of the husband and the wife. But what the revocable trust does, it creates a trust which basically is seamless. So when you have a situation like that, his primary concern was that his wife, on top of having to deal with losing him so quickly and unexpectedly, wouldn't have to deal with having to go through the probate process on top of everything.
Wow.
So that is the perfect vehicle. Sadly, he did pass away, but she literally did not have to do anything, and everything was seamlessly transferred over to her by way of the revocable trust. And so for that, and while it was a sad situation, he had peace of mind knowing that his wife and two children would be taken care of. And I mean, it's probably been 5 or 6 years since that time, and I'm still in touch with the young mother, and she's doing well, and as well as can be expected with that kind of a burden. But as far as financially, she was completely taken care of because he did such careful planning. So
wow.
That's one of the sad but stories that he just, you know, he was so relieved that he left this world knowing that everything was going to be okay as far as the financial part, that his wife was going to be taken care of and their children over their lifetime. And for a young man, he had made a lot of investments and he had planned very well. I think he'd only worked professionally for about 7 or 8 years, but he did a tremendous amount in investment planning. And you know, it was very sad to see something like that happen, but to see like his love that he had done all this and to his dying day, he was thinking of how are my children and my wife going to survive? And I need to make sure that they're going to be okay. So,
Baby, this is a very emotional situation that you actually help families and help individuals go through just by holding their hand. And you do have a very sweet, gentle, calm demeanor. And I know that helps.
Thank you.
But how do you support them? I know that you say that you're still in touch with her going forward. Do you continue to counsel those that are here and maybe help them? Because you said she was in denial. Makes me wonder, would she prepare the same way that he prepared?
She actually did. It took her several months to recover and I guess be functional from that sort of situation. And she did come into my office and say, you know, what do we need to do? And I said, look, you know, everything is taken care of. You just need to call me if you have any issues. I didn't have to even make phone calls because everything was so seamless in that situation. But she did come in about a year later and say, look, this happened to my husband. I want to make sure that my children are taken care of should something happen to me. So we basically reworked her estate plan so that, you know, her children would be taken care of should something happen to her, as well as, you know, like guardianship paperwork and whatnot as well, just in case. So
that's an amazing story. And, you know, I commend that family for, you know, coming together and doing that, and for him as well to have the foresight to take action, even though she was still in denial. I commend him for taking care of his family that way. So, Bibi, we're at the end of the interview here, and it just goes by so fast. But is there anything else that you would like to share with our listeners before we get to those final questions that we haven't talked about already?
You know, I just, like I said, I do feel like that estate planning and probate, it's almost become a passion for me, just because I see people where they struggle, where this is a situation when someone loses someone in the probate process where they just don't know what to do. And I always tell people, well, you know, think of me as that, you know, crabby old attorney in the movies that is saying, like, look, this is how it's going to work out. This is how it's going to pan out. And I think when people realize that I will be there in the background just in case their family needs me, I always find, like, a great – for some reason, I do have a great deal of fulfillment knowing that I can help people through that process. I lost my father at an early age, and I remember that time period where me and my mom were just at a loss. And, you know, I was in my mid-20s, and I just had no clue. So I kind of, like, look at it from that perspective is, like, how would I have wanted to have been treated by people to get through that process. And so that I try to help people out the best I can. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, because it is a difficult time, like I said, motions, and we're not necessarily thinking clearly during that time.
Right.
So it's great to have somebody like yourself in your corner to know that you know, you're grounded and can make things happen. So now we're down to those final questions here. So the first one is, when faced with obstacles, Bibi, what kept you going?
Well, I guess it's a, you know, a standard answer. It really is comes down to my family, particularly my husband. When I have, like, the down days, it's like, you know, when you have a small firm, you're accountable for everything, and it does get stressful with the emotions and everything that we've talked about. And he's always there, and he's like, you can do this. And, mm-hmm. you know, seeing my little kids and their faces, and it really is just that, I guess, the stereotypical, my family, my husband, my children, and my mom, they always get me through the obstacles, always have. So
well,
I can always rely on
them. We don't do anything on our own. You know, there's
correct.
That misconception that, oh, we're the business owner, we're the face of the business, but I would have to say 9.9 times out of 10, people have that cheering section, that support group around them that allows them to have the strength to go out there one more day and do
that's
it,
true.
Especially on those days that are, and we all
right.
do. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely.
True.
So the next question is, other than a coach, who's influenced you the most?
I would have to say my dad. He, you know, even though he was a professor of agricultural economics at Texas Tech, and so he was a highly intelligent person who was, you know, I couldn't even begin to do the mathematical equations and you know, the econometrics. It was just so sophisticated and nuanced to me. But more than his intelligence, I remember his kindness and his compassion. And I guess he was just the most ethical person I've ever known. So I guess I've always tried to be, you know, try to think in my head, what would my dad do? Again, a very, you know, pat answer, a very, I guess, stereotypical answer, a very common answer. But my dad has always, I feel like he always has guided me through everything. Mm-hmm. And so even after he's been passed away 20 years, but I always think of, well, what would dad do in this situation?
Mm-hmm.
And it helps
yeah.
me.
Absolutely, it does. And I have to tell you that the networking community that you and I participate in the DFW area, you certainly have the reputation of being very ethical and very, you know, just one of the best people that you'd want to do business with. So your dad is mm-hmm. probably proud of you right now because you're carrying that on. You carry that on. So the final question here that you wish you had known early that you'd like to share with our listeners.
I guess, you know, maybe just not being involved in things that didn't interest me in practice, in my career. It was just, you know, things that I just had no interest in doing. You know, it seems like it was worth it. You struggle with it, and then you ultimately, I just never want to give up on something. And there are, I guess, areas of practice that I just did not enjoy, and I felt like it was a huge waste of time. I'm one of these people that I always think that, well, even when there are obstacles, you still learn from them. But there are some practice areas that I dabbled in early on in my career, you know, after I moved from New York and started my private practice, that just just were not for me. And so I think that those are that if I had learned that, it's just, you know, don't bother with things that just you're not passionate about, that you don't have an interest in it, and you know, don't waste your time is what I think.
Yeah. Just staying focused on that continues to interest you and you have that passion. It's just following those breadcrumbs to your passion and not going down those bunny trails, they say.
Exactly.
Well, Bibi, we're at the end of the show. One more time, if somebody's listening and they say, I want to contact this gal, I think she's got some great information, how would they get in touch with you again?
You can contact our offices, HBH Law Offices, at 972-346-8076. And my work email address is bibi@hbhattorneys.com. And I'm very happy. I every once in a while, I'll get questions from people that just find my email and will just shoot me a little question, a legal question about probate or estate planning, or they'll just call the office. And we welcome that sort of thing just because we like to, you know, it's hard to watch people that have not taken the measures to plan and have to struggle through probate. And they have to spend all this money. So it actually makes me happy when people do reach out, even if I, you know, they're strangers or whatever, they just have seen the website and they reach out to us. It's that's what it's there for. So.
Wonderful. Now, Bibi, do you speak to small groups of small business entrepreneurs, individuals about wills?
I do on occasion. You know, every once in a while, like something will come up within the networking groups, or I have gone out to other smaller communities, just, you know, a little bit away from DFW, and just have given little talks on mostly probate and estate planning.
Great. Bibi, thank you again for being on the show today. You brought a wealth of information and knowledge. And folks, if you don't remember anything else, don't go to Office Max to get your will. Don't download your will on the internet. Call Bibi first, please. Thanks again, Bibi, for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Linda.
So, folks, I want to leave you with this quote. You know, I always leave you with a quote every day at every show. Estate planning is an important and everlasting gift you can give your family. And setting up a smooth inheritance isn't as hard as you think. That's a quote by Susie Orman. And you just heard Bibi talk about how critical it is to have that estate in place, to have that will in place. So make sure that you take care of your family. Call Bibi if you have any questions. And we'll see you next time right here on Empower Radio Show.
As we close our show today, we want you to know it's time. The time is now for you to cast off the chains of mediocrity and reach for that brass ring. The time is now for taking that giant leap to start a business. Step out of your comfort zone and become the you that you've always dreamed of being. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Empower Radio Show. That's at MPOWERRADIOSHOW. Thank you for being with us today on the Empower Radio Show.